Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Roland. Welcome to Sunday.
Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
I purposely had to stop and think about saying good morning to you because on the on-ramp today, I think I just jumped out at you. I started ranting and you're like, hey, good morning. How are you? I'm like, oh yeah, that's the civil thing to do is to say good morning to your friends hello.
I love that you're kind of pointing that out. It's funny. That is a thing. I don't know how it's become a thing about me that I always try and put some sort of salutation in, even if you look back, like on, let's say on yours or my text string, or I know I'm constantly Pam that I used to work with, often she would hit hard with something like right away into the conversation. And I would almost feel, I just always, just to try and kind of ground the conversation a little bit, I'd put a little like, good morning, how you doing? What's up? And then I would sort of do my response. So, you know, when I did that, I apologize if it almost seemed over parental, but I find myself doing that more often. I had a friend back when I was running restaurants named Sean, and Sean was he was a server in one of the restaurants I worked in, and he was notorious for stream of consciousness connectivity, where he would just come walking up beside you or behind you, and he'd already be in conversation mode, and you would wonder, like, are you talking to me, Sean? Are you talking to me? He's like, yeah, you know, and then he would just continue the conversation. I'm like, dude, I don't know where this conversation started. Like, I feel like it's just, I moved into the scene and someone's talking to me. So yeah, I do that sometimes. Actually, I do it more frequently now.
Actually, you know, I know of it.
I've pissed people off by doing it, eh?
I bet you have.
So I'm conscious of that. And anybody in the past that I've ever said hello to, when you've just started talking to me, I apologize.
As soon as you started to explain what you do and what you're known for, before you even said anything about the texts that we exchange, it's so true. I will dive into something and then you'll respond with, how's your morning going so far? And then you'll answer my questions or whatever. I'm like, oh God, here we go. I wrote down one word, civility. So it's almost like, it's true. It does bring like a calmness. So when you say to me, oh, by the way, good morning, after I just that. Ranted, you it does ground me a little bit, and it brings it. I feel like a cassette tape. I rewind. So I'll be playing, maybe fast forward. Hey Chris, this is going on right now. Can you believe this or whatever? Can you believe so and so said that? And then you'll be like, by the way, good morning. And then I'll hear the rewind sound in my head, and I go back to the beginning. I'm like, oh hey Chris, how are you? And then I proceed. So, when you said it, I thought of the word civility. There's something civil about it. It's nice. It's also, I have to say, a sign of comfort with another human. Maybe in my situation, I'm calling it comfort. There could be times where it could involve discomfort. Like if I'm really going off and I walk into a room and I'm already ranting or whatever, I might just go to somebody and just jump in and not even say, hey, how are you? And then start, I might rip into them, and not in a negative way, but just be going, right? It's like you walk into a room and I'm already flying. I'm not going to stop myself and be like, good morning. So I can see it coming out of me two different ways. The first way is a familiarity with the person I'm communicating with. And the second way would be that I'm so pumped up, I'm so like out of focus that I'm just going off, and it doesn't matter who's in front of me or what's going on.
I can remember one of my first conversations that I had on Squirrels was with Roy and Lee. And we were talking a little bit about it was from his point of view, social learning or social learning, but social learning through media spaces. So he was addressing Twitter. He was addressing Insta. He was sort of talking about his blog, and he was talking about his kind of like his, not his philosophy. First, it was his observations of what that those spaces represented. And initially he said it seemed like a great big party. Like, you know, like there was just so many people and so many things going on. And just to be in the mix was kind of, that was the thing. And then he started to get to a point with it where he said, when being in that space, he started to feel, for him, an obligation to be a positive player in that space. And he really recognized that there's two different layers of feeling there. You know, other people have kind of talking about, you know, if you're learning curve with Twitter, like it's okay to just like things, it's okay to lurk, like you can kind of be that person in the background. So he was kind of talking about that transition to participating fully in the community. And what I liked about his next step with it is that he said that as soon as he acknowledged that he was a part of the community, that he was a part of that space, it was no longer that strange party that you just arrive at, then he stepped one step further into how do I make that space better? How do I positively contribute to it? And, you know, we can do this as digital citizenship, or we could just say, as you said, civility and connectivity. And it's always given me a lot of thought fuel to consider how I operate in person and on digital. And it's funny, on digital, maybe you get this, tell me if you get this, is that to be civil on digital feels like does it take more work for you to be civil on digital or IRL?
Digital, for sure, digital. I think it's maybe you don't want to hear why I think that, but.
Yeah, no, throw down.
I do feel on digital, I got to write this down, on digital, it's easier for me to go off. And I think it's because there's no queuing systems on the other end. I can't tell I can't tell how a person is delivering their message because there's no body language. There's no like straight up tone that I can hear or my brain can decipher. None of that exists. So I feel like I interpret their message the way I interpret their message. I don't have, unless they have something in brackets that tells me this is not serious or I'm really angry or whatever, I don't know. But I try to remember what I teach my students and how I try to live my life, I guess, is that I don't know what's going on the other end, and I should remain as civil as possible and as professional as possible. But at the same time, there's a line where I think I've gotten a little testy with people, but I don't think it was testy to the point where I was being like a complete jerk. I think it was, or maybe you could call me a jerk, but that's as far as it goes. I'm not doing anything immoral or illegal or whatever. But I do find digital is more difficult just because I don't have the queuing systems. Also, I've had people say to me when I've gotten into discussions with Jonathan So, I consider Jonathan a friend of mine. And so when Jonathan comes at me with something, I'll go back at him. And people have said to me, oh my God, I saw that fight that you had with Jonathan on Twitter. So Jonathan and I didn't fight. We don't fight. We were having a conversation. Maybe it was an argument, but a healthy one, not like a negative one. And it's funny because even people, they're viewing a digital exchange and they're like, oh, Roland's really going at this guy. This guy's really going at Roland. When really the backstory is we know each other from in real life. I communicate with him often, like I communicate with you. He's my friend. And so I feel comfortable doing that with him on Twitter or any other digital mean. So I'd like to hear your perspective on that. I don't know what to call this. I'm going to call it the IRL versus digital divide because I don't have anything else for it.
It's part of what I think it is more difficult IRL, not digital, because I feel digitally I have the time to shape what I'm going to say. Like I almost feel like it's one of those funny things. I think often we talk about dealing digitally as a knee-jerk response. that you sort of, that sort of posting regret. But I actually feel like that I have the time to shape an answer. Now, I've also found that other individuals are not tolerant of waiting for an answer and the conversation just moves on. So, you know, depending on what's being connected or being reflected or being broken down or being shared, tracking digital conversations to stay in the mode to get to an answer or something that you would feel like you've both worked on or whoever it is you're talking to is really difficult, only because the river just keeps on going. The one thing about in real life conversations is that you invest in the moment, but the person is generally right there in front of you. So there's something in the sort of like using the pause button that that is so much easier to do, I think, to do when you're actually face to face with the person, because you can actually say to them, you know what, I want to return to this conversation. Can we go for coffee next week or something like that? Can we actually talk next week? So digitally, I find you can pause and think and sort of come back and do your research. Like it's almost gives you more opportunity because the person's not in front of you, but the conversation may move on without you. Something else that you had said, and I don't know if it was right at the front end of this, but it was when you first started talking about the civility factor that you were talking about, was that you right away cued me up with the sound effect of those, like rewinding through a tape. One totally got me because it reminded me of, so when I was in university, part of my, so I did theater studies in university, and I really enjoyed the tech side. I had to do the acting and the directing and the script writing, but I enjoyed more the tech side, sort of building sets, painting, construction, sound design, costume design. And I can remember using the multi-track tape player and that sound of, you know, like hitting the switch and it playing back through something and playing it forward and then going backward and playing forward, trying to find the spot where you could actually dovetail the two, like if you're splicing and dovetailing it back together. So that sound right away totally cued me up. And I love it because I think that one of the interesting challenges in reflective practice with digital, I don't have a great way to say this, but we've lost the trigger of that sound effect that something has just happened. Let me shape that a little bit. If I were listening to an audio track with the multi-track player, when I hit rewind, because the playhead is still in contact, there's some sort of a metaphor here, analogy, you got to help me with it. Because the playhead is still in contact with the actual tape, you hear the audio very quickly in reverse. Now, if you get skilled at it, you can actually stop it just in time. Like you kind of know, like, oh, that's where they laughed right there. And then you play forward from there. And I often, you've got me thinking about how with digital connections, it's really hard to play back that tone of humanity in the conversations. Like it's hard to sort of backtrack to the point of the feelings in the conversation and, you know, and then play it forward and then kind of come back and play it forward. We have a lot of artifacts. We have a ton of artifacts because of our digital, our capacity to capture the, any sort of media we want at any given time. But I've often, I got to throw down another person. So Jen Apgar, she was talking to me about podcasting, and I said, podcasting for me is a way to reflect in real time with a person because I'm not prone to go back through my tapes to be reflective. I kind of need to do it right now with the person in as best a synthesis of having the person in front of me and having the data happening at the same time. And part of that discovery led me to feeling less comfortable with using something like Zencastr as opposed to just going and sitting with the person with my iPhone and having the conversation. And what I have done is I've listened to two different conversations, one on, you know, one that I know that I sat with the person, had a coffee, and the other one where I've done it on Zencastr. And I think I have an appreciation of the tone of the one far more. The complications, of course, are a part of the tone, which increases the connectivity, which makes me feel a deeper sort of synthesis of what am I talking about, who am I talking about, and why are we talking about it. The civility is an extension of that, I think. I realize I leave a lot of sort of dot, dot, dots at the end of the things that I say. What are your thoughts?
The dot, dot, dots, I think, are great open spaces for people to jump into.
Okay.
So, I mean, sometimes I think that you do the dot, dot, dots on purpose. Whether you do or not, I think you leave those open-ended. You just leave things open-ended. People can jump in.
Okay. Sometimes I run out of steam too. It's sort of like get to a thought. I'm like,
I'm done.
Yeah. So yeah, you're right. It's a mix. It's a mix.
I feel like what you were saying about the tape and how, because when you're rewinding, the tape is still touching, is still in contact with the part of the machine that makes the audio come out. I love what you were saying about the rewind is so true, because I remember hitting rewind and being able to hit rewind, and then my brain would tell me when to hit stop, because it'd be like, no, that's the part that you want. And I think our brains are like super machines, obviously, right? That can handle that type of thing. We don't give our brains enough credit for what they can do most of the time. But that doesn't exist. That doesn't exist when you're dealing with humans. You got me thinking about there are some cueing systems when you're dealing with people on maybe when to push a conversation, when to pull back. Some people don't have those filters. They don't understand. You could be crying because you just had something horrible happen to you, and someone will walk into your classroom and they'll ask you for the math textbook anyway. Right? Like, yeah. You'll come in, they'll be crying, and you'll be crying, and they'll be like, oh, I'm just here for the math textbook. Okay, it's right over there. Even, I have to admit, sometimes I turn my filter off. If I walk into a classroom and there might be three people, one of them's crying, two of them are consoling them, there's a couple of things that I might do. The first one is I might look in and be like, oh dear, sorry, I'll come back later, and I turn on leave. But if it's somebody who's constantly crying and constantly being consoled, I might walk in and say, oh, I'm sorry, I don't want to disturb you. I just need the textbook. I'm going to grab it and go. Because it's like this happens so often that I'm just not canceling my life anymore because you're upset. But you're being consoled, so somebody's taking care of you. Somebody's helping you. I just need to help myself with this. And I guess that could be seen as me being like heartless. It could be seen a number of different ways. For me, it's about I understand the queuing systems of that human now. And I guess we have a relationship where I can still walk in, grab the math textbook while they're crying and being consoled by another staff member. So I guess it's context. And sometimes we don't have that. Like when you meet a new person or you're in a new situation, you just don't have the context. And I would like to say most of the time I err on the side of caution and I back off. But there are times where I still come on strong. And I think that's strategic. Like sometimes in social situations, when it's called for to jump into something or to interrupt someone for a particular purpose, I back off on those moments. Because I feel like they're rude and I'll just wait my turn. But then there's other times where I just feel fed up. Like I need to get this done now. And I'm not waiting. I'm going to do this now. And then I do something that might be perceived as rude. It's all about context. And I think it's all about, for some people, there are filters for different things. And some people are more gifted at that than others. For me, I guess I'm missing pieces, I'm missing parts And I'm not really bothered by that. I'm just, you've got me thinking about it. I'm expressing it here.
Mm-hmm.
Something I noticed that I want to talk about, I've been working on today. So I think if my processing is a lot slower, there are many reasons to that. But one of them is that I'm trying to be, I'm trying not to use certain words when I speak.
Interesting.
Because I was listening to the episode where I got to talk with Brad Schreffler on his podcast.
Okay.
And I saw lots of room for improvement in the way that I communicate on podcasts and just in general.
Walk me through that. What is it? Can you be a little bit more specific?
I say the word "so" a lot. I use the word "so" as a filler, a time filler, as I'm processing.
Like a transitional tool, language transition? Yes. Okay.
And I don't like it. And I don't like it for a number of different reasons. One reason being is when I was in university and I worked for Carleton University, the person that was responsible for me, her name is Jen, she taught me how to speak properly in public. She really spent a lot of time teaching a bunch of us how to present properly. And so I always go back to my time with Jen and the learning. There's something happened in, you know, there are moments in your life where things happen. And while they're happening, you're soaking up every single moment of that experience. It's just like your brain opens up and sucks it all in and retains it all for whatever reason. That happened to me when I worked with Jen. And now I think about, I've been much more aware of how I'm speaking, how I'm communicating, and listening to it, I didn't like it. So I don't know why I like that word so much. So I've decided that for this morning's podcast, I'm going to do my best to communicate more effectively and to try not to use certain words for time filler. If I need time, I'll just stop talking and think. Yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think that people get caught up again in the, I need to get my message out and I don't want the other person to think that my message is over or that I don't know what I'm talking about. So I will just throw in so here and there and like there and so here and I'm here. I'm not saying that people shouldn't do that. I'm just saying I don't like it when I do it because I've had some training and I would like to polish my communication up a little bit.
I think that's a great example of exactly what I thought you and I are not doing here. Let me try and shape that. So before you presenting it to me as a personal, professional opportunity, which I get. I've listened back to pieces of my own presentations, conversations, some of the narratives. I've listened back with an ear where I sort of ask myself, who am I trying to be in this conversation? I've kind of brought it back to without first listening with the technical ear, as in you're too rambly, you didn't really have an organized idea that you're hanging that on, like all this stuff that would be entirely representative of the polished piece. Instead, I'm taking it back to the beginning, as in, as you say these words, who are you? Are you being you? Are you using the speech patterns that you're familiar with? Are you putting something on? Are you stretching to a place like you're less of you and, let's say, more of the guest or the person that you're talking with? Someone had said to me, and you know, another reference to Chasing Squirrels, that in the conversations, when they listen back, it feels like I'm sort of like taking on synthesizing the person that I'm talking with and sort of dancing with them in time according to their lead. And I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of that as I'm doing that. But I would say that I'm constantly checking, am I in step with the person that I'm talking to? And am I feeling genuinely absorptive? Like what you're saying, like, am I feel like I'm taking it in? And as I've found that as if I can check that, that can be distracting to a degree, I will tell you as well, because then you inevitably fall out of the conversation. But when I do check in, that's my litness. I love what you said about finding that person that you feel, and I don't know if it's about the person or if it's about you. Let's say it's about the moment that happens between the two of you, where you feel like you are really, you're soaking it up and it feels rich and it feels like you're getting some of that source code stuff that you're going to move forward with. I crave that. I look towards that. I've had those moments too. I don't know if I've ever fallen on the, I have to stop using, let's say, certain words or phrasing. I don't know if I've challenged myself that way. I got to consider that.
I just don't like it.
Are you aware of it as you're talking? Like, do you even?
No.
Okay. So if you're not, if you're not necessarily aware of it, have you been aware of it this morning as we were talking?
This morning, yes.
So how are you pulling back from that? Apart from the comedy or some of the lightness of saying, I was just about to say it, which we can kind of do here. If we make it, which is great, maybe that's the way to call it out. Maybe that's the way to do it. Maybe that's the civil way to do it, is then you're actually taking that pause in the moment, like, oh, I was just about to go down that path again. One last thing that I'm curious about. Do those words control your thinking? Or is it your thinking pushing out that word? And I guess the one way to think about it is, if you're sitting with someone, I'll use a really sort of out there example. If you were hanging out with someone and you felt compelled, like you felt sadness or tears coming on, just as an example, would you allow the tears to come out in time when you felt it? Or would the tears be more likely to come out as soon as they slide the tissue box across the table to you because they notice it in you? So do you comply with what you notice, or do you comply with what they notice? Or is there somewhere in between you're like, I do one solid tear, suck it back in, and on I go. So do your words, as you're checking them, do you feel like your words have control over your thinking, or is it the other way around? I don't even know if that makes sense. Welcome to Sunday morning Thanksgiving 2018, yo.
The first thing is that you're not going to see a tear come from me.
All right.
The first thing. That's not going to happen. It's only going to happen around certain people, and I'm not hanging out with those certain people often, so it's not going to happen.
Okay.
But emotion. So it's funny that you say that, because I felt emotions when I spoke to Brad Schreffler on his podcast. And it was around, I remember clear as day, I was talking about one of my teachers from high school, and during the podcast, I felt emotional. I think you might be able to hear it, but there were no tears. Okay. And it wasn't Brad that brought it on. It was my words that brought it on. So to answer, I just did it. I said, and so I freaking hate that. When I listen back, I just dislike it so much that I need to work on moving forward and leaving it alone. Okay, let's start over again.
Okay.
It's my words that bring on the emotion, not the person passing the Kleenex box to me, number one. Number two, it's going to be rare for you to find me dropping a tear in a conversation, because I've always been guarded that way, if you will. It's just the way I grew up. It's who I am. I will fight back the emotions unless I'm very comfortable with the person that I'm talking to, like even with you, you and I are buddies. You know a little bit about my life. I know a little bit about your life. And so I've probably exposed certain things to you about my inner world that other people would have no ideas going on. That's what you do when you're with friends and you're talking about family and work and things like that. That's not generally how I roll. But so if you and I were having a conversation and we were talking about something, it could get me going in terms of, you know, from like an emotional perspective. And there could be emotion that is displayed in crying or getting choked up. But I would say,
call it out as, I mean, I focused on the tears because I've had that moment play out. I mean, both in support of somebody else and of me, it's the, you know, it manifests as a result, a very specific result of somebody doing something. Does that make sense? Like it's very specific. And just the sliding of the tissue box is a visual that someone has either witnessed or whatever. And then it just like, it falls out. But let's put it in the frame of full emotion. Full emotional engagement. And I think within that, there could be things from true high fives to laughter to maybe some misery, some sadness. It's that moment where you feel like you can, as you know, let's say let down a bit of a fence and share. You feel safe enough to share.
That doesn't happen to me.
No.
The positive, okay, I'm already giving it names. The fun part of emotion, the laughing and like the happy part, the happy stuff, that's no problem. I will engage that with anybody. In fact, it happened at work last week. I was talking to a colleague about I don't know what to call it, situations in life where you are at your most you're at your most vulnerable state in front of others. And what happens is that you decide that there's no escaping the situation you're in. And therefore you just have to laugh and you do it because there's no other option except cry. And for me, we know that the crying is not an option. So it's always going to be the laughter that'll happen automatic. The emotional, the other end of that spectrum where you show emotion that some might perceive as weakness or vulnerability, that doesn't happen with me with strangers. And if it does, it's because we're in a situation, a safe situation. And the only example I can think of is when I was taking leadership courses through the school board. There was this amazing program that they had years ago, and basically they brought a group of 15 of us together, and it was a retreat style. And it was done over, you know, six sessions over a school year where we'd spend a whole Friday together and then half of a Saturday, and we'd be in this really cool space. We had this really awesome facilitator who was trained in facilitating people, exercising, you know, discernment and leadership and things like that. And so that crew that I was with, they got to see a side of me that a lot of people don't ever get to see, because it was, the ground rules were simple. Like, this lives here, this stays here. The only way this works, the only way that we can produce something here and for you to grow, is for everybody to feel good about what's happening and that we're not judging each other based on responses to questions or the way we treat each other depending on the moment. And I bought into that 100%. And I remember thinking, I'm in 100, here you go. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so honored to have this opportunity. My brain is open. I'm ready to suck everything in and hold it. What's come from that is an amazing, amazing connections with people. So right now, my vice principal at my school, her and I went through this program years ago. And so when I see her every day and we're just chewing the fat and just talking about life or whatever, I have a different relationship with her than I do with a lot of people in the building, because her and I spent, you know, six sessions in a situation and a context where if everything was wide open and we were there to learn and we were there to communicate, and everything that happened there stayed there. And I truly believe that all the people I participated with took that seriously. Now, if they didn't, let's say, you know, one day I meet someone, they tell me something that someone told them that only I shared at that opportunity, that course. Well, then, you know, I would say to the person who leaked the information, this is on you. Like, how do you live with yourself? You know, we made promises. We agreed to the norms of the group, and you went out and you let this out. Like, for me, there's some shame there for that person, that I can't do anything. I left myself wide open and somebody broke that trust. I know that if I've done that, it's devastating to me, because I actually believe in those situations. I take those moments very seriously. Anyway, that's just like a, so for me, there are times where I will open myself up in a way that I wouldn't normally. And I've done that in situations where I've been part of groups that are formed for particular purposes. And the facilitator is a good one, who says, this is how this works. This is why it works. And I get it. My favorite graduate course, one of my favorites, there's been a few, one of my favorite graduate courses when I was studying to be a counselor was group counseling. And part of that experience was that we had to do group counseling to learn group counseling. And so, you know, again, there was like 15 of us in a room every week for like 12 weeks, and we're doing group counseling. And so how can you not let your guard down? How can you not? I mean, in my belief is to really understand it, to really benefit from it and be able to help others benefit, you really have to open up. And it's funny because I'm like an enigma. I'm telling you right now, I don't open up to anybody. But then in these situations, the doors are wide open. Like, I'm like a Jeep YJ. I just take the doors right out. There's no roof. It's just like you can see right into me. You can see what I'm about, the good and the bad. And that's it. At the end of an experience like that, I put the doors back on, put the roof back on. I even take the Jeep and stick it in the garage for half the year, and you just don't see it because that's not what I'm about. I don't even think we needed to go there, but I went there because I feel okay here doing it. This is the cool thing about this podcast. Sometimes I say things on the podcast that I would never say to anybody else, but this is recorded, and I even push it out. And it's like, if people want to know, they can come and listen or watch. That's got to be a phenomenon somebody's been studying or has to study. How something like this for someone like me will allow me to say things like I'm talking to you. I'm fully aware that we're doing here is available to anyone and everyone in the world if they want to see it and hear it. And yet I'm still talking about things that I would never say to someone face to face. That goes for the decoded videos too. Those videos, I had a friend say to me the other day, he watched some of them with his girlfriend. He's like, by the way, I watched the Yellow Folders video. That was awesome. And I looked at him with a look of shock. The look was, you know, but that was in me. How did you know that? How did you know my struggle with the Yellow Folders? Like, it's almost like I told you something, Clef, and then you told someone that you shouldn't have told. But he's like, I saw them on your YouTube channel. I'm like, oh yeah, those are on my YouTube channel. You know what I mean? I don't know. Something's going on there. I don't know what you call it or where it comes from, but that's why I think that's maybe why I'm drawn to podcasting, to making the videos, because I feel like I can actually speak about who I am, what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, and feel no shame about it. I feel no shame about what I've spoken about today. And yet, if someone comes to me in real life and says, Roland, you know you can always open up to me. I'm your friend. I'd be devastated. I'd look at them and say, why are you talking to me like this? What what's going on? I'm not letting you into my inner circle. Why are you opening the gate and walking into my inner circle? And then they'll say, oh, I saw it on YouTube. Oh, shoot. That's right. You did, because I put it there.
That's what it's like, that moment, because you're replaying the media moments that you've willingly shared out. Not you, everyone that I think is tracking the humanity in the posts that they put out. I think it's also probably, it speaks to what I was saying before about, I feel like when I have the time to think it out and to respond within a Twitter chat. Twitter chats are a bad example because it's such like, it's the Autobahn of EDU conversations. Being able to sort of like shape your response, not to an artificial end, but to that space where you feel like you're actually in touch with your response. It's not just something that you're putting in, you know, the bottle and letting it float out on the ocean and hope you know, I often find that the more I push myself to be intentional in not, let's say, not only my own reflection, my reflective practice, whatever that might be, but the more intentional I am in trying to build that connection, then I feel that even if I'm going to piss somebody off, I feel like I'm in step with what should be put out into social media. I think the funny part that still plays into this is the forgetting. And the forgetting of, yeah, I did have that conversation and it was great when I was talking to that person and I was in the moment when I was talking with that person. Somebody else gets the opportunity to engage with that content. I guess the surprise comes down to that for me it's about I was so connected to the moment that you start to forget that other people could be listening. And when someone comments on it, it brings forth that, wait, was that just the authenticity masks the fact that you were doing it in open spaces. So digital open spaces, if you decide to do that, and someone commenting it or mentioning it draws in that same kind of strange emotional response. Like, how did you find out about that? How did you know? And you have to go through your own memories. Oh yeah, I did do that on YouTube. I guess. And if you're saying it's authentic and connected, then okay, I guess it was. I was in the moment, so I guess it was authentic to a degree. I've had a few of those too, a few of those moments where someone addresses the conversation, and I forget a little bit. I had mentioned before the 25th hour. I don't know if we're going to get much time to be able to shape the 25th hour. Are we going to have any time to jump on that?
I have time. I mean, we're still, it looks like 9 minutes before we normally shut off, but I'm open to, I don't know what your schedule is. Mine's wide open right now. So
I think
I did it again.
I think that you're going to become like the most intense conversationalist like I've ever met. The words just like saturated with intention. I'm going to walk away feeling like dude just grabbed a hold of my soul and just wouldn't let go for an hour. I think I got family. Let's do it. Let's go. Let's, you want to play with it for 10 minutes? I'm kind of listening to upstairs. So here you go, you know, Decoded fans, the life of life flows around this podcast in vivid and powerful ways. So with it being Thanksgiving, family is coming for a breakfast thing. So let's do this. So we had a little bit of the convo in the on-ramp about 25th hour. What you got for that?
Okay. So let's drop a little bit of context. So you and I were talking before we started the podcast about our lives and just how busy this week has been. And that was the key. We were talking about how busy we are. And you said that you wish that you could find the 25th hour in the day so that you could get more stuff done. And then I joked about there's a difference between cool busy and real busy, and that we're not cool busy. We're not walking around telling our friends and telling our coworkers, oh my God, I'm so busy. I can't do this and I can't do that. That's what I call cool busy. We're not cool busy, and we both need the 25th hour. I was saying how I was sick this week. There's no time to take any time off work, number one. Number two, life has to go on. My kid has to get to hockey. My other kid had some stuff to do. My wife has a life. I don't really have a life. Like, I like to go to hockey with my son, and I like to do things with my family, and I have my work. That's my life, and it's taking up all my time. If there was a 25th hour, now I'm thinking, Chris, would we just burn it up with something else, or would we actually use it for something productive? And the word productive needs to be defined, and I'm not going to do that. But what I am going to say is, as you and I were talking about our busy lives, I threw in some salt and pepper, and you decided to throw some shade on me because I was talking about, you know, making videos for my kids' hockey team. And then you started laughing, and you're like, well, some people would say that, you know, that's you peppering your life with busy work, and you're not complaining, but you're talking about how busy you are, but you're choosing to insert stuff into your day that are not directly related to productivity in a professional way. And then my response to you was, hey, if I'm not throwing salt and pepper into my day, then I'm going to go nuts and I'm not going to be at work, because I'm not going to be well, and I'm not going to be able to sleep because I'm not going to be well, and I'm not going to be the nicest dad and husband because I'm not going to be well. And so the salt and pepper, the things I insert here and there in my busy day, are to keep me sane, and everybody does it. But I before you say what you want to say about this, I got to say, I am not cool busy. Trust me, I am not walking around looking for things to do so that I can say I'm busy. I would love, well, last night I wanted to work on my progress reports. I sat in front of the TV watching college football and on my iPhone working on a video. None of it was work related. My kids were asleep. My wife was chilling. I decided I'm watching college football because I need a little bit of that, and I'm going to work on this video. So I was multitasking but doing things that I needed to do so that maybe today after we're done, I can bang out some progress report stuff before we have hockey and the big meal. That's my take on it. I wish there was a 25th hour, but then I wonder, would I just waste it away?
I think my space was the remarking, like, somehow if I had that extra space, it would be purposeful. You know what it is? It's the chasing the dragon thing. It's like somehow believing that if there was more time, kind of what you're saying, if there was more time, more would get done. I think back to our conversation about talking about what we learned about doing podcasting, a little bit of, like, you know, being able to go from this chunk of time, like that refinement of skill, bringing it back and sort of going from 7 to 10 hours to be able to push out an episode to bringing it down to 3 to 4. And am I intentionally using that time that I've saved? Am I aware even of that time that was saved? Or am I just still blowing through the extra bits? And I think this is just another layer of that conversation with myself. Like, somehow life would be better if I had more time. The truth of it is that I can't for sure say, you know, that having that idea of a 25th hour truly would probably just be a burden, because I'd still be pushing it. I think for me, like you said, unless I'm actually putting in the large set pieces of what I want to have there, and a big part of the 24 hours is taken up with the obligatory things like work, like, you know, well, there's a whole lot of stuff, work, taking care of family, you know, all these other sort of things that are major set pieces. I think the path through that is what I'm really examining. I think my 25th hour exists inside the 24. And I'm trying to figure out where is that, where it'll, because the truth of it is, it'll feel like spare time. It'll feel like extra time. If I can, you know, sorry, not if, when I figure out how to, get a better handle on directing my time, I guess. I thought a lot this week about organizers and checklists and measuring out what I do. I actually got to a point in this past week where I felt like I should build my day almost militarily. So set a regimen for 1 week, and put everything in there for one day, and like for a week's worth of regimen, put it in, measure it out exactly, and see where can I build efficiencies into my week. I don't know how it even occurred to me. I know how it occurred to me. I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about the military and how some people do very well with that type of a regimen, up and moving and active and doing deployed, actioning, all these sort of very technical language to really, I'm like, I want to live my week effectively. So I don't know, maybe that's what I'll do. Maybe that for next week, that's what I'm going to be looking for, that 25th hour inside the 24. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. Oh, come on back. Did you unmute?
Hello?
I love these moments. Hey, how's it going?
I'm working again.
Yeah. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
I don't know what I did, but okay. Can I say two things?
Yes.
Three things. I can't wait to see how you find your 25th hour in 24 hours. I'm looking forward to that. What would be cool is if you vlogged it all week. If you just walked around like this and be like, okay, so right now I'm working on this. That'd be so cool.
I'll try. That is interesting. Yeah. And I know there's things that I want to start putting down on tape that might be a good experiment for the week.
And the other two things, I think I lost them. 25th hour. I'm looking forward to that. Oh, here we go. Military podcast. Last night when I was watching football, it was Notre Dame versus Virginia Tech. And before the game started, the announcers were talking about how Notre Dame brought Jocko Willink in to talk to them pregame, which I thought was very interesting, because first I was like, oh, this is cool that there's a link between Jocko and Notre Dame University. The second thing was basically Jocko was brought in to talk to them about extreme ownership, which is a book that he co-wrote with his buddy, former coworker Leif Babin, who were in war together. And so extreme ownership and talking, connecting it to the football field, and how when you play your position, you either do your job or you don't, and you're going to have to be accountable for that. So I thought that was interesting. I thought I'd throw that in there when you were talking about military podcast. I thought of Jocko and how, you know, I'm really happy for these former warriors to come back and be able to contribute to society in a way that they probably never contributed like before. And people are eating it up. We're not going to talk about that. And then the last thing I wanted to say, which I tried so hard to squeeze in throughout the podcast, we have a new subscriber. When I logged, your face was just like, what? We have a new subscriber. So when I was emailing.
Welcome, subscriber.
Well, yes. And let's drop her name. So her name is Mylène Brassard. She's, I think I've seen the name on Twitter. I'm sure we follow her. She follows us. She's probably connected to Sarah Lalonde.
All right.
This is all, I'm making assumptions. I'm sorry, Mylène. I've not researched you yet. I probably won't. The name looks like I've seen it from on-ed mentors and stuff like that.
Okay. But
I got the email that we have a new subscriber. So welcome. And you're like,
welcome, Mylène. Reach out to us.
The fourth or fifth person. I don't know. And it's funny because I'm thinking that, you know, one day we'll have, you know, 10 million subscribers. And I will have stopped saying hello to our subscribers maybe after the 100th. Until then, the lucky, 100 people that subscribe, we will make sure to say hello to you and thank you for subscribing.
That's awesome. I like it. That's pretty cool, actually. I'm happy to include more people in this conversation. Anyone that wants to throw us their thoughts, their space. There's a 25th hour in this podcast.
No, no, nobody wants to jump into this podcast. Okay, Chris.
Okay. Why do you think? Okay. You're going to, I want you to close on this because like I said, I think I hear some rustling upstairs. I love that statement. Why is it that you think that?
Because people have lives and they're not going to spend it.
I wasn't expecting that. Yeah.
This is the Chidiac Clough experiment, which has gone wrong because it continues. And I love it. I think it's great. It's great to connect. It's great to model for others. It's great to have some content out there. It's a wonderful way for people to approach me and say, hey, I heard about such and such. And then I look at them and I think, how do you know that? Oh, from the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone said, listen to this. And it was you, Roland. Uh-huh. Okay. On that note, Chris, have a great Thanksgiving day. Enjoy your time with your family. I'm looking forward to doing this again next week if that's the way our weeks play out.
Mm-hmm. I always believe it will, but I'm always mobile enough when we got stuff. So,
yeah, shout out to you from yesterday. I think I texted you Friday night and I said Saturday's a no-go because I got this, and I can barely squeeze those things in. So you just wrote back and said, let's do it. Sunday's good. Let's do it. Okay, here we are.
We got this space. Here's our 25th hour.
Here it is. Okay. Well,
still marketing that. That's our t-shirt. That's one of those t-shirts. 25 hour work week.
Yeah. I'll wear it if you pay for it.
Okay. That's a good way to say it. All right, dude. Take care of you and yours. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to whomever is listening.
And, same to you.
Take care, man.
Yeah.